This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Intel intros 3D transistors.
And the HPC market's big rebound.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for May 6, 2011. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research. Good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael.
Well, we had some good news courtesy of you and your organization. It looks like HPC is back, baby.
Yeah. We got our new market model and forecast out, including 2010 actuals. And 2010 was a big year. We had 22% growth over 2009. So HPC is definitely back. That's for sure.
Well, 2009 was a really bad year, so 22%, that's good. So we're starting sort of from, what might be a 10-year low point for HPC. So that's a decent rebound, but we got to kind of dig ourselves out of this hole.
Right. 2009 was particularly low, and 2010 was a particularly high growth rate. Now, it's important to remember that a big thing that causes these short-term swings isn't real gain or loss of business, but rather what happens to the length of the sales cycle, how long it takes someone to buy machines. HPC is not something that someone just goes out and decides to buy one day and puts on their credit card. The sales cycles tend to be pretty long, depending on the size of the system. It could be weeks, it could be months, it could be a year for a big supercomputer, how long it takes you to plan that purchase. And when the sales cycles stretch out in a recession and it takes an extra set of reviews, an extra set of signatures, an extra round of budgetary scrubbing to get that approved, and your sales cycles get a month longer, 2 months longer, 3 months longer, you take that much revenue and drop it from 1 year into the next year. And then in the following year, when the sales cycles come back in and people start buying things faster, you're essentially taking revenue and pulling it forward into a year. So, you know, although there was some real business lost and some real business gained in 2010, a big part of that effect is sales cycles. And it's a good early indicator that the economy and some confidence is coming back in the long term.
Right. And sort of like you implied there was probably some pent-up demand for 2009 where people did not have the budgets for these things, but they still needed this equipment or infrastructure. So 2010, everything was sort of let loose, and of course some government infusion money as well, and things loosened up a little bit.
And this is very consistent with what we're hearing from the vendor community, too. SGI just put out a press release that they had a relatively strong first calendar quarter for them, which is their third fiscal quarter, and their best Q3 since the acquisition, and also looking at the traditional rackable business before the acquisition.
Right. They had a record Q3 fiscal year quarter, the first calendar quarter of the year, so that was good.
Right. And that's traditionally a weaker quarter for SGI and for HPC in general. The first calendar quarter of the year is not usually the best. So even now we're seeing some good business, and we expect to continue to see strong growth, in particular in 2011, 2012, as we keep ramping up before we moderate back to sustainable long-term growth rates going out through 2015.
Right. And this latest forecast that you guys put out, you actually broke out sort of your new categories, technical computing and business computing, which used to be edge computing. So how did those two compare?
Right. So we used to call it traditional HPC, edge HPC. We've made a few tweaks to the methodology and now refer to it, as you said, as high performance technical computing, which is all of the science and engineering applications, and high performance business computing, which is our category for non-scientific business applications. And the reason for that distinction is because they have very different buying patterns and different associations as end users. The high performance business computing which includes things like finance, insurance, logistics, ultra-scale business computing, online games. So we get into a lot of these categories, but a lot of them, although it's HPC technology, they don't tend to associate themselves with the term HPC. They don't think of themselves mostly as HPC users. Some of the biggest banks do, but finance, it's best to keep all together in that one category. And finance is the biggest single component of high-performance business computing. And all of that high-performance business computing category is mostly, it's almost all commercial businesses, companies. There's a few government things that sneak over in there that really fit better, because if you look at something like the Federal Reserve Bank or Fannie Mae, things like that are technically government, but they fit best in financial services. But you asked how they compare. High-performance technical computing is 69% of the total number. High-performance business computing is the other 31% and has a slightly higher growth rate overall than the technical computing side.
Yeah, and I would guess their buying patterns are maybe somewhat dissimilar, too. I mean, obviously, there's not going to be, these petascale supercomputers bought by the business community, whereas the technical computing side, at least the elite users are going to be buying all of those. So, I mean, can you talk about what buying patterns are different, or if there is a difference besides something like that?
Well, yeah. So this forecast document that we put out specifically forecasts the different product categories, the servers, the storage, the software, the services, the networking, with different growth rates for HPTC versus HPBC, going actuals back to 2007 through 2010, and then a forecast out to 2015. And all of the growth rates in all the different categories are different because they have different connect rates storage, the servers, or things like that. Servers tends to be a slightly smaller percentage overall in HPTC. And we'll have more detailed segmentations coming out with the different vertical markets, the different product class, the server class splits of entry level up through supercomputer, the different geographic splits, with North America is a little less than half now, and we forecast out how the different geography regions look going forward. So we've got all of those details coming in future reports. This one's the overview report that gets the top level numbers and forecasts.
Okay, well, yeah, that would be an interesting report to read, and especially in this case, it sounds like it's all good news, whether you're on the technical side or the business side of HPC. Looks like we're going gangbusters, at least hopefully for now and for the next few years.
It's all, very good news with the strong year. The total HPC market now for 2010 was a $25.6 billion market, and that's going to grow to $36 billion by the end of the forecast period in 2015. So this is still a good, strong growth rate area. The only bad news, if there is any, that's built into our forecast is that in the near term years, 2011, 2012, we did have to kind of put a limit on our expectations for government spending and, to a lesser extent, academia, especially in the U.S., given the current budgetary climate. And that is built into our forecast also, that we see real limitations on the HPC spending there in the near term.
Well, speaking of gangbuster quarters and gangbuster years, I mean, we just heard Intel just had a great quarter and some really big revenue numbers. But this week, they sort of proved why they did that. I mean, they just quote unquote reinvented the transistor. They came out with this 3D transistor, which is actually going to be put into the next processor generation, the Ivy Bridge generation.
Yeah, Intel's looking really good, and this goes back to your side of the news. You did a nice write up of these new 3D transistors. So yes. What's the deal? You got a fin on it now, right?
Yeah, there's a fin. So everything used to be 2D in the processor business. So you had these planar 2D structures, and it was just, two dimensions on the chip. And what they did was they brought fins, looked like fins, like these rectangular structures, up and out to get basically more gate material around where the electrons were flowing.
Right. So, this is the gates on the transistors have gone 3D, right?
Right. So there's, you know, we're getting down to the atomic level. There's too much leakage, and the, on the 2D level, it was leaking out too much. It could only be protected on one side. Well, now the 3D, it can be protected on three sides. So this non-conducting material can sort of hold the electrons in. So you can put, you know, the signals through faster and just prevent leakage, so you can get better performance or lower power or some combination of those. And they're the first company that's done this. They've been working on this for nearly a decade, so it's not like a big surprise. But I don't know if anybody, I don't know if anybody knew they were going to announce it today, but I think it was always sort of geared for their 22 nanometer shrink of their current Sandy Bridge, which is going to be Ivy Bridge, and it's going to come out, the first chip's going to come out towards the end of this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is an important step, a necessary step that we've been looking forward to, because as they start marching down the tens of nanometers and getting, you know, right. Now they're going 22 nanometer. They're talking, what's next after that? It's 14 nanometer. Eventually, you start talking about one atom of silicon has a width, right? and you're not going to get below that. So, and in practicality, you're not going to build a wire that's one atom wide either. You need some amount of material. So, there's a limit to how far those shrinks can go. So taking things into the third dimension, as you said, gives them a lot more options for how they're going to continue to shrink and speed up these processors, get more transistors onto a core.
Right. But even this, Intel's going to do it for their 22 nanometer. And then they said for the follow-on 14 nanometer shrink a couple years down the road. But beyond that, they really haven't said. So it seems like they're going to have to do something else. Now, like you said, once it gets down to a certain level, there's the semiconductor material itself is not suitable, and nobody quite has a specific number where that's going to be, but we're approaching it. But yeah, this 3D stuff's going to work for at least two process nodes, and then they're going to have to reinvent it again.
Well, when I was at the HPCC conference in Newport, John Gustafson said something extraordinarily clever during his talk, although he claims he was quoting someone else. But he said that the number of people who are predicting an end to Moore's Law is doubling every 18 months.
Right.
and I thought that was a clever quote.
Yeah. But someday those guys are going to be right. So eventually that will happen. But yeah, for the near term, it won't. You know, the big news here is Intel's the first one to do this. I mean, they've always been at least a year or so ahead of everybody on the process nodes, and that's where they are now. This is a big step because the 3D part's a little more difficult than just a regular shrink or adding the high-K material in. So Intel thinks maybe they're 3 years ahead of everybody now. I think that's pretty optimistic. Everybody's working on the 3D technology, which other people kind of generically call FinFET, which is the fins and then field effect transistors. So we're going to see those from the other companies. I think TSMC, that foundry is working on it, but they're not going to put it in until their 14 nanometer node. So everybody will eventually catch up, but not this year.
There was nothing said about to what extent Intel holds a patent or exclusive on this kind of design. So I think you're right that eventually you'll see others starting to come in this direction. But there was no counter announcement from AMD or IBM or anybody saying, oh, yeah, we've got that too.
Right. And these guys are on, they're a year behind. So like AMD, they're on the 45 nanometer technology, while Intel's already on 32, and next year everybody will just sort of move up a slot. AMD's going to come out with the Interlagos, and that'll be on 32, but by that time Intel will have moved on. So the other vendors, and AMD in particular, is playing catch up here, and it's just something Intel has been fundamentally better at for years and years, and I don't see that changing in the near term, and they just have this advantage.
Now, the other thing that wasn't clear to me, Michael, was do I need to wear 3D glasses in order to use these new chips, or is this some kind of a passive technology that just works?
Yeah, it just works. I mean, you can use 3D glasses if you want, but that's for your
own. Well, they look cool.
They look cool.
That's I've got some right here. I'm wearing them right now. Our podcast is in 3D.
Yeah, especially if you're wearing those. Yeah, we should say this is not 3D chips. This is not 3D processors. It's not die stacking. That's not what's going on here. That's going to come. you know, maybe in the next generation. But
no, this is just the transistor itself, the gates on the transistors.
Right, the gates. And it's like, you know, so we're saying 3D, but it's, you know, it's a few nanometers up. So it's not like it's not going to slip into a flat form factor or anything. They're going to put these in cell phones and everything else. So it's they're flat. It's just, you know, these fins go up a few nanometers.
Right, right.
And Intel maintains this is only going to add like 2-3% of the cost of manufacturing. So that's good.
I saw that too. That was interesting. They're claiming they're still going to be competitive on the cost side as they build these new chips and speed them up, that you won't take a price performance hit going to that. So that's another key part of this story. Now they got to get that working at volume, but you know, it looks like this is Intel continuing to surge ahead, and in this case, in their traditional sphere of excellence in the processor itself.
Right. I mean, one thing that I read that, you know, if there was any downside news, it doesn't look like Intel's going to really emphasize this on their mobile chips immediately. They're going to put them out as they usually do on their desktop and server chips. They usually do that in order. So we'll see these. We'll probably see the first server Xeons in early 2012 in this technology, and then the mobile chips probably much later in the year. And this is something where, you know, analysts think they could actually get an edge because they prevent the leakage, so they're much more power efficient, and they could start to bump up against the ARM competition a little more effectively on their Atom line. But it sounds like, you know, they're going to go after their higher margin chips first and go after that and trail with their more mobile or their lower power Atom line later. So, but that'll be an interesting story as it develops maybe later in the year, that if they actually are able to sort of beat ARM over the head with much more power efficient chips, even though the architecture might have certain disadvantages. That'll be an interesting story as well. But for us, it's going to be the Xeons, and they're going to be going up against the new AMD chips in 2012, and that'll be the battle there.
Terrific. Well, it sounds good. We'll keep watching it. I'd like to close, Michael, if I can, by thanking some of my followers on Twitter for suggesting content to put into our new survey that's going to launch next week. We have kind of an open subscription model. I had room for another question and asked my followers my Twitter account, at Addison Snell, to suggest something to put in. I'll be tweeting the answer to that question as well. So a little quick shout out to my tweeps.
Excellent. Okay, well, that'll do it for this week, and we'll wrap it up and do it all again next week.
All right. Thanks, Michael. We'll talk to you next week.
All right.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.